This is not like TV, only better.
Television! Teacher! Mother!
Secret lover.
What, that's it? That's your movie?
Well, I said that I had an idea for a movie.
Hey there, folks. This is Screen Watching. My name is Dan Barrett, joined by a man who could probably be best described right now, if people are looking at the video feed, as a man who's very much into Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego cosplay. It's Simon Foster.
No way, my friend. It's my nod to Indiana Jones. I've got the whole hat thing happening here, and I'm getting old, so I'm doing a full Harrison Ford thing. Yes, this week we're doing our Indiana Jones special episode, and I am very excited to be doing this because it's been such a huge part of my movie-going life. So we're going to have a look at our favorite villain, our favorite sidekick, our favorite female co-star, favorite opening. It's all there on the running sheet, Dan. You really should open it if we're going to do this podcast properly. So what are we going to talk about?
I haven't looked at the run sheet, so obviously, okay, favorite villains. Yeah, I'll see how this works. Okay.
Crack it, my friend. Look, this is very exciting. I was at the closing night of the Sydney Film Festival and saw Indiana Jones on the very big screen there at the State Theatre here in Sydney, which is where I got my very cool Indiana Jones hat. No, you can't have it. So I'll be reviewing Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and then we'll doing a little bit of a walk down memory lane and remembering what all these wonderful films have meant to us over the years. So, yeah, very exciting times.
Yeah. So I was just thinking about, like, seeing movies at the theatre there. I don't know, I've seen a couple of things there. Like, it's fine. It's slightly better than I expect it to be, but I'm never hugely impressed. Sorry. I can't stay focused with that hat. That's clearly not an Indiana Jones hat at all, but whatever.
You want me to lose the hat? All right, I'm going to lose the hat. All right, the hat's gone.
In the interest of good taste.
The charity. We should talk about the new film, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Let's get on with my review. Play that clip.
I'm retiring.
Well, in that case, what are we drinking?
Same for the goddaughter.
Dad told me you found something on a train during the war. A dial that could change the course of history.
Why are you chasing the thing that drove your father crazy?
And we are recording this before the press screenings for people like myself are able to get along. So I haven't seen the movie. I plan to. I'm excited about seeing the movie. I'll have to pay my own hard-earned money and also not review the movie on the podcast because we're recording it right now. But whatever.
You'll find some way to get your opinion out there. You're the master of that. But let's have a look at The Dial of Destiny. Yes, this one opens up with that most dangerous of gambits, the CGI de-aged leading man. It goes all the way back to 1944. Indiana Jones, played, I guess, with dots all over his face by Harrison Ford, is a much younger man, and he is on a train with his colleague, Basil Shaw, played by Toby Jones, who isn't de-aged for some reason. And they are sort of toing and froing between cabins with what is known as the Dial of Destiny, or more precisely, the Antikythera, which is a device which reportedly in mythology allows you to transport through time. But what they are is up against Jürgen Völler, played by Mads Mikkelsen, a Nazi who is determined to get hold of the Antikythera for his own nefarious means. Then we jump 25 years later, we are in the late 60s. The astronauts have just landed on the moon. Dr. Jones is now a very old man, and Harrison Ford very bravely shows us his body in an opening sequence where he is very much the 70-plus year old elderly gentleman. He's not really getting on with the modern world. He doesn't like the noise from next door. He's just being retired from his teaching position when a young woman called Helena Shaw, played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, turns up. Turns out she's Jones's goddaughter, who Indy hasn't seen since she was a wee lass that he called Wombat, and she is now hunting down the Antikythera on behalf of her father, but she also has nefarious means. Völler is now working for the NASA organization, but he wants to get hold of the time travel device to right some of the wrongs that the Allied win in World War II disrupted. His plans are to resurrect Nazism. If only wait a few decades, it would all be happening anyway. Okay, so does it work as a spectacle? Yes, it does. It's directed by James Mangold, the first Indiana Jones film that Steven Spielberg isn't directing. Does it lack some of the more magical fluid touches that Spielberg does with his camera? Yes, it does. James Mangold is a very good director, and he captures a lot of the action really well, but it doesn't quite have the artistry or the knowing nods to past cinema that a Spielberg Indiana Jones film does. What it does have is a very committed performance from Harrison Ford, in which there's a whole lot of sentiment, both for the fans of the four films that have gone before it and for the character himself, Indiana Jones, and the path that his life has taken since we last met him in Crystal Skull. This builds in intensity. There's a muddled midsection that all takes place in the Middle East, which is too talky by half. And there's some big actors like Antonio Banderas who are wasted in small roles. But when the more mystical elements kick in and the last half hour of this film really revs into gear, I've got to say it was probably as much fun as I've had since Last Crusade. And we're going to talk more about which are the best of the films to date. But I think this is a very fitting farewell for Harrison Ford in the character, with all the sort of fan beats being hit without playing like fan service. And I think that's very important. So that's as much as I want to say without spoiling any more of the plot, but it's for a fan of the Indiana Jones films, it's a very, very fitting way to wrap up the old man's story.
Yeah, cool. I didn't listen to anything then because I'm trying to preserve going in pretty cold.
That's okay. Nor should you. The four films that have gone before, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, Last Crusade, Kingdom of the Crystal
There's been three movies and a TV show.
What are you saying?
I'm saying there have been three movies that are called Indiana Jones. Oh, sorry, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Give it the correct title.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and then they did not make any other movies until this year.
You're taking that standpoint, are you? Well, that's going to throw the next few segments.
It's the only standpoint one can take.
I too am no fan of Crystal Skull. I'm not quite as down on it now as I was when I first saw it. I've watched it a few times on the Blu-ray since then, and I've come around to thinking there are some elements which are unfairly maligned in this film, but it is the clumsiest storytelling-wise of all the films. What are your earliest memories of Indiana Jones? What was the first one you saw in the cinema?
I don't know if I've seen any of them at the cinema. I might have gone and seen a movie which didn't exist at the cinema. Now, it's possible.
Okay.
It is possible that Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade may have been the first movie I saw in the cinema as a conscious human being. So I know the first movie I saw in the cinema was E.T., but I was 2 years old and, no recollection of that at all. But I've been trying to think recently about which movie is the first movie I remember seeing at the cinema. And I don't know, I saw a lot of movies from age nine, which is roughly what we're talking about here. Okay. So I saw a lot of movies from about that age at the drive-in, because we were a fairly ardent drive-in attending family. But around 1989 is the first time I remember going to the cinema. So I know I definitely saw the movie Batman in the cinema, which came out in June. August of this year, I think. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But also
items for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, I was a child.
That's interesting. I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, the original one, at the great Paramount Picture Palace here in George Street, the sadly departed, and it was one of the seminal sort of movie-going experiences of my early years, 80s, 81s. So it was released on June 12th, 1981 in the US and August 14, 1981 here in Australia. And I would have seen it two or three times after that, that is for sure. Temple of Doom was such a big deal for me, the sequel coming out in 84, that amazing summer of 84 that had, Ghostbusters and Gremlins and a whole bunch of classic sort of Hollywood American summer movies. May 23, it came out in the US. July 19, these are back in the days when we had to wait a few months to get the big Hollywood releases. It came out July 19 that same year. That Window Tightened with Last Crusade. I saw that at the Greater Union Cinema at Parramatta. It came out May 24 in the US and June 8 here in 1989. And then Day and Date for the movie that is not mentioned, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Oh, I mentioned it. In fact, we got it a day early here. We had the premiere a day before the US release in 2008. So huge, huge parts of my movie-going memories are dedicated to Raiders of the Lost Ark and just the innumerable times I've watched Raiders on VHS and Blu-ray as well. So what
before we get to that. So I've been going through a process of rewatching all the movies, or at least that was the plan.
Yes, I know.
Okay,
yeah.
But I sat down and watched Raiders of the Lost Ark, and as I was watching it, I kind of think that the last time I saw that movie was the last time I should have watched that movie. Like, I kind of feel as though when I watched it the most recent time, I've seen it so often. Like, I just sat there and I don't know what the experience was, but I didn't really enjoy it. And it's purely because I think that on my most recent rewatch, that was where I tipped over into having seen it too many times. I went and saw Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade at the cinema recently. So when the pandemic was on, there was no new movies. So there were just a whole bunch of cinemas playing retrospectives for like, you know, about a year and a half there in Sydney. And so I saw a whole bunch of beloved films on the big screen. I saw 1989's Batman on the big screen. I saw Point Break. I saw The Untouchables three or four times. There was just all sorts of movies just playing on a big screen. And there was that cinema, which I'd never been to the cinema before. And I'm hoping you can maybe sort of give me some guidance as to exactly where I was. It's a cinema. I think it's a one screener. It is somewhere on the northern side of Sydney. Where was I? It wasn't really Chatswood. It was maybe like North Ryde or around that way somewhere. There was a very bad Chinese restaurant nearby that we like grabbed some dinner at beforehand.
Well, this is fascinating stuff. We could really talk about old.
But anyway, I went and saw Indiana Jones.
I could talk about that.
I went and saw Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade there. There was maybe two other people in attendance. There was a young girl who was like maybe about 10 years old watching it with her parents, who was about a row or two in front of us. And then it was my wife sitting next to me and like some guy probably out the back somewhere. We all had a grand time and it held up very, very well. So really glad I did that. But really by and large, you know, I can't see Raiders of the Lost Ark ever again. Maybe I can see The Last Crusade a couple more times.
All right. Let's get into a element by element breakdown of the films. Now I've busted this down into favorite villain, favorite sidekick, and we're going to just rate the best. We're going to come out with, we're not going to rate all of them, but we're going to come out which ones are our favorites, let's say. Now, obviously, Raiders of the Lost Ark set the standard, so you could pretty much sort of rattle off Raiders for all of these, but we're going to go a little bit more of a deep dive, a little bit more nuanced in the way we look at this. Favorite villain, Belloc, played by the wonderful Paul Freeman, and I've also put in there his henchman, Tote, played by the wonderful Ronald Lacey in Raiders of the Lost Ark. You'll remember he had the emblem burned into his hand and did one of the great jokes in the film when you thought he was going to torture Marion, but instead he made a coat hanger for his jacket. Still one of the great scenes. In Temple of Doom, you have Mola Rum, played by Amrish Puri. In The Last Crusade, Walter Donovan, played by the British actor Julian Glover. And then in the film that will not be mentioned, you have Irina Spalkel, played by our one and only Kate Blanchett. Now, all have their own strong points. Do you have a favorite villain from the franchise?
I mean, look, if I have to abide by your list, I guess Belloc, but ultimately the villain I'd be choosing for this one is maybe God. From Raiders of the Lost Ark,
he plays
obviously
a big part in all of the films. Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, and Last Crusade, because one of the complaints about Crusade was that it was a very sort of Judeo-Christian focus that some countries sort of reacted a little bit against. But yeah, well, yes, of course, God's the power of God in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Really, when it was unleashed, had some like grueling bits to it.
Politely, God, I mean, maybe this makes him a hero as well, but I don't know. He just really fucked up a lot of people in that movie. But they were mostly Nazis, so, you know, obviously I feel conflicted.
Exactly.
But, like, a life is a life, Simon.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna say the great Paul Freeman as Belloc was terrific. And it hasn't aged well, but Amrish Puri was a great evil temple operator, Mola Ram in Temple of Doom, but I'm going to go with the Raiders team on that one. Okay, favorite sidekick. This one's interesting. Sulla, played by the great John Rhys-Davies, who turned up in other films as well. Short Round from the Temple of Doom. Professor Henry Jones, Sean Connery in The Last Crusade. And one Shia LaBeouf as, oh God, I can't believe they called him this, Mutt Williams in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So we can rule out at least one of those. Who was your favorite sidekick?
Look, I mean, Sulla, I don't know if there was a sidekick. He's certainly a supporting character, but I would actually say the sidekick in that movie is actually Marion Ravenwood, who also
Well, I didn't want to double down because we're coming up to our Yeah, we're coming up on our favourite actresses, and she's got a big role in that. So I didn't want to sort of do the sidekick, but Sulla with his – he certainly got an expanded role in Raiders. He's become a bit more perfunctory in other episodes, but
– Yeah, I think just because, you know, who Sulla doesn't love John Rhys-Davies? Yeah, I met him once, really nice guy.
Yeah. Lovely guy.
Look, I mean, for this category, I'm just going to say
– Maybe
– Simon? I've got an answer. It's Marion Ravenwood. Yep. I don't care that she's not on your list. I'm going rogue and I'm putting her in there.
Well, you. All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to say, boy, Professor Henry Jones, Sean Connery in The Last Crusade as the father of Indiana, I think maybe sort of brought an emotionality and brought a realness to, and certainly brought a real comic element that the series hadn't had up to that point. So I'm going to say Sean Connery. And that was really at the height of sort of Connery's Hollywood career. He'd just come off the Untouchables and doing a whole lot of work. Okay, favorite actress, Marion Ravenwood, Karen Allen in Raiders. I met her. I interviewed her. She's wonderful. Willie Scott, played by the future Mrs. Spielberg, Kate Capshaw in Temple of Doom. Dr. Eartha Schneider, played by Irish actress Alison Doody in The Last Crusade, and Marion Ravenwood again in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, coming full circle for her. So you sticking with your Ravenwoods?
I mean, it's following your list, it's difficult to take seriously a list that says favorite actress and also list Kate Capshaw. Like, I think that's just unfair to the skill of acting. Like, it's just cruel.
Not a fan, huh?
Alison Doody, I think, is hamstrung a little bit in Last Crusade, and I just don't think her character's really given anywhere near enough to do, which is a bit unfortunate.
She's a Nazi, George, a Nazi.
Yeah, she's a strong presence, though. I quite like Alison Doody in that, but it's going to have to be Marion Ravenwood.
Yeah, look, you can't go past Marion. No one made, you know, few actresses have made such an indelible impression from that period as Karen Allen did as Marion Ravenwood. But just like you, Alison Doody, who went on to do a couple of other things but kind of disappeared very quickly. She went back to Ireland and made a couple of films with Liam Neeson, I think. She's a bolter for The Last Crusade. All right. The Raiders, the Indiana Jones films are famous for their opening sequences. We are going to have to pick our favorite opening sequence. There's the iconic spiders and then the big boulder and the gold icon. Give me the whip, throw me the idol, give me the whip, from Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's the extraordinary musical number from Temple of Doom in which Kate Capshaw sings Anything Goes. There's one of the great film openings ever with the young Indiana Jones adventure, which explains the scar on his lip and his fear of snakes and so on and so forth, in The Last Crusade. And then you've got the whole atomic bomb and refrigerator moments in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I do have some thoughts on that, but what are your thoughts on the rest of them?
Look, I mean, it's tough because before I listened to you just then, I looked at like your list saying spiders and boulders, and I'm like, amazing opening title sequence. Anything Goes, amazing title sequence, and then the young Indiana Jones sequence. And before you started talking, I was thinking about it being an amazing sequence, but then you kind of argued me out of some of them. So here's where the arguments lie. Young Indiana Jones, one of my big pet peeves is when they tell prequels or give like backstory to a character that makes their origins or, you know, other influences in their lives just a lot more large and impactful than they probably were. So case in point, and this isn't a good movie comparison at all, but in the last podcast, we saw about Spider-Man, so it's pretty strongly on my mind. and we recorded it about 25 minutes ago. But
been a long night.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other week about this same sort of a thing, and in the Spider-Man comics in the early 90s, and I never really read the Spider-Man comics, I just know it's a thing. Spider-Man, we all know like Spider-Man origin, bitten by a spider, gets powers, goes pew, 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 and, you know, hangs off buildings.
Yep.
We all know about that. We know about how he sort of took on the Spider-Man costume. We all saw the movie where he ends up taking on like a wrestling persona. He's wrestling a person, holds up the back room and takes the takings for the wrestling, goes out on the street, ends up shooting his uncle dead. And then he comes out on the street and is like, Uncle Ben, why? And then Uncle Ben's like, great powers, great responsibility. Ugh. And then, you know, goes on to become a superhero called Spider-Man. But in those early 90s comics, they throw an extra wrinkle in, which apparently the reason why Peter Parker's living with Aunt May and Uncle Ben isn't because his parents had died or, you know, something else. Apparently they were spies. And so suddenly there's like this sort of much larger mythology built onto the world of Peter Parker. And I looked at your face just then. It is nonsense. Like, it just does not need to be there. We don't need to have these extra things layered in. So when I think about Indiana Jones in that opening sequence,
right,
where we find out about every single element of his origin and everything we know about his character seems to come from this one half hour of his life, like, that's just incredibly lame to me. Like, why do we need to see that distinctive mark on his face is from when he was whipped in this one incident? He gets his fear from snakes in like this one time. Like, it's just too much. So if
that's
they hadn't loaded
humor,
that in there.
There's a lot of humor in the Indiana Jones stories. And they thought they really played to the crowd.
That's
and
not
the fans
humor.
In that bit.
That's exactly it. Fans. It is fan wank. And I do not stand for it. So immediately that's ruled out of being a good intro. So that's off the table.
Okay.
Anything goes. It's just an homage to Busby Berkeley. And yes, Busby Berkeley created some amazing on-screen visual scapes, but at the same time, let's celebrate Busby Berkeley for that and not Steven Spielberg just doing his own ripoff of that. As magnetic as that may look on screen, it's not really original. It is just pure homage. And while I appreciate that Indiana Jones as a concept is pure homage to the swashbuckling films and stories that George had grown up, you know, absorbing as a child, I think I'm just going to go with the Indiana Jones, the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the spiders and boulders, because all of that's iconic. And also, I mean, it's got a great supporting turn from what's his name, who I can never remember the name of at all.
Alfred Molina.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yes, of course, the opening for Raiders is one of the most iconic bits of cinema of the last 100 years. So yeah, I will weigh in on that. Now, I do just want to I have an interesting opinion on the Indy survives the bomb blast in the refrigerator in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Yes, the joke doesn't land, unlike the refrigerator, which lands with a thud that would kill him. The actual lead up to it, where he escapes the Nazis and goes into this suburban paradise where there's all mannequins and he starts to realize that this is actually a bomb test site. It is a beautifully shot sequence. The actual explosion of the bomb when he gets out of the refrigerator and walks up the little hill and looks at the mushroom cloud going up is a beautiful, beautiful bit of filmmaking. But the only thing anyone ever remembers is the stupid joke where he hides inside a fridge, which is lead lined, which is how he survives the blast in the first place, and is hurtled through space and time, and he'd come out of it with every broken bone, but he doesn't because he's Indiana Jones. So it's a shame because it's some of Spielberg's most stunning bits of special effects filmmaking. So we're going to quickly go through our favorite moment. And I've listed what I thought were the favorites. Obviously, there's a whole lot more in these films, but I thought we might just zero in. Do jump in if you have another favorite moment. In Raiders of the Lost Ark, the shootout at the Himalayan Saloon, at Marion's Saloon, there's the great breaking out of the tomb sequence. There's the fight with the giant Nazi officer around the Nazi fly wing in Raiders, and It's Beautiful, which sums up the final moments of Belloc at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. They're incredible sequences. Do you have one, any of those, or some other
in Raiders,
you might have from Raiders of the Lost Ark?
To me, like, surely it's the sequence where they're running around the town area, which sort of culminates with the swordsman and the and then just shoots him. Like,
exactly.
That's, I would have thought, the moment from that movie.
There, yeah, I know. There's more in there. The what's that called on the soundtrack? It's called The Dance of the Baskets, with John Williams' beautiful music sort of as Marion's being carried around the town square, and the famous scene with the swordsman and his shooting. Yeah, it's a great, great sequence. There are so, and there's the great sort of truck chase in Raiders of the Lost Ark as well. So
It's fine.
Yeah, so they're all there. In Temple of Doom, Monkey Brains, the removal of the young man's still beating heart, the room of bugs, and the mine car chase. Four great sequences from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Do you have a favorite of those four or any other one?
Well, because this movie is a movie for children and children alone, I recall back to being a child watching this movie that is for children. And like the things that resonated with me most are probably the Monkey Brain scenes or the mine car chase. Both I remember quite a fair bit, but I think Monkey Brains, anytime I think about Monkey Brains, yeah, I think of Temple of Doom. But when I think about mine car chase, I think about Donkey Kong Country. Yeah. So I guess Monkey Brains gets it.
Spielberg, he had a bit of a reputation for going much, much darker when he made a sequel. He went much darker with The Lost World when he did that. Temple of Doom has some very mean, dark, nightmarish moments in it, and that, along with Gremlins, was one of the films that sort of caused a bit of an uproar and was instrumental in creating the PG-13 rating back in 84. I love The Room of Bugs. The way you cut together the, no pun intended, the removal of the heart sequence was truly nightmarish. So I've grown to really love Temple of Doom. I don't know why. It's come around in my way of thinking, despite being troublesome. Things got a bit lighter and a bit funnier with The Last Crusade. You had that great Venice Canal chase that ended with the propellers on the boat. There was the tank chase. There's the towards the end where he has to recite that only the penitent shall pass when he enters the tomb of the Knight Templar. And then, in honor of the great Sean Connery, there's a line where he says, Indiana. Indiana Jones is trying to reach down and grab the Grail, which has been Professor Jones's, his father's life work. And to save Indiana, he says, let it go, and just says, Indiana, some of Sean Connery's best acting. So it brings a real emotional core to Last Crusade. Did you have a favorite bit from that?
Well, I like the I like the Venice Canal chase, but I kind of think that it loses a bit of steam when they sort of leave the canals and make their way out into more of the open water with all the boats. Like, it doesn't really quite hang together that well at that point. The Only the Penitent Shall Pass, like, that closing sequence is like a, you know, incredible set piece. I'm going to go with the Zeppelin sequence.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Which I think that's just incredible. I mean, no ticket. You know, classic.
It is a great sequence. And yes, we're going to weigh in on four scenes from Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Simon, you are going to weigh in. No, we, you.
At the start of the film, leading up to the kitchen moment, the refrigerator moment, he has a terrific rocket car escape. There's a sequence involving ants when he has to outrun the flesh-stripping ants in the jungle. When they do finally get to the legendary city of Akator, in a film that's completely rife with some terrible special effects, Akator is a great bit of production design. It's actually a physical set and it looks great. And the end of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, when all our hearts swooned when Indiana and Marion finally got married. So there are some moments in Crystal Skull which do still fit into the quality of the first films, although overall it's a far inferior work. You're not going to weigh in on any of those?
No.
I know you were telling me before we recorded the podcast that you love the alien character at the end there, that turns up. Okay, wait, now, sorry, this sorry, will Simon, appeal to you.
Was that the same what conversation the where moments? I said this? Sorry, is that the same conversation I said this will be the last time we record a podcast together?
All right, this is going to give you a chance to get some stuff off your chest. They do have some dull moments. They have some crazy bits that don't travel well in each of the films. The worst moments from Raiders of the Lost Ark, he goes all that way on a submarine. Come on, dude, really? That's kind of stupid. Overall, the sense of white savior Rhythm in Temple of Doom. He saves the religious stones and brings happiness back to the villagers, kind of on the nose now. The whole opening of The Last Crusade was literally just almost a shot-for-shot riff on Raiders, which I think they thought was funny at the time. It kind of pissed me off and still does. And in a film full of questionable creative mistakes, this sequence featuring CGI monkeys and a CGI Shia LaBeouf swinging Tarzan-style through the jungle was truly, truly awful. Obviously, that's the one for me. Do you have a least favourite Raiders moment?
I mean, obviously, it's the monkeys and the... I mean, like, it hurts me. It hurts me to say that a scene with monkeys, yeah, my favourite of all animals, was, you know, contributing to the stink pile that was the Crystal Skull. But that sequence... Oh my God, Simon.
It is just a terrible, awful, terrible sequence.
Horrendous. Yeah.
There's some, and without giving too much away, there are a couple of moments in Dial of Destiny where you go, ooh, guys, tone it down, that were a little bit sort of CGI-ish. But I guess by this stage, that some bad CGI moments are kind of as much part of the Indiana Jones story as the fedora hat and the bullwhip. So maybe we just have to wear it. So, but it's been an incredible time for us fans of the Indiana Jones. Did you ever watch the young Indiana Jones on television? What was that young man's name? Patrick Flannery?
I think there were about two or three young men that played young Indiana Jones at various ages throughout
Sean
the...
Sean Patrick Flannery, mate?
Yeah. Look, yeah. I've tried it a few times and just never... Yeah, I could just watch it. Very yeah. Done. Sorry, I've just been trying to find the name of the cinema.
That brings to an...
And I just can't find that this even exists.
You've been doing that this whole time, have you?
Like, did I imagine this entire thing?
I don't know, thinking it might be. I know. I mean, that's my area. I know all the cinemas. I don't know any single screen cinema in North Ryde here in Sydney. Maybe
I'm sure it's a single screen. Yeah, baffling. Anyway, Simon, we'll get there.
No, we're at a loss.
Simon, have you ever been to the...
That brings to an end our special edition. What?
Sorry, I was going to say, have you ever been to the Jumeirah Square cinema? Which is located all the way out in Campbelltown. Mm. But it's got the notoriety of being the cheapest cinema in the country.
No, I don't think I ever have.
$7.50 tickets.
Wow.
Yeah, for all movies.
It'd be worth going to where? Incredible.
However, sorry, I'll just a quick little anecdote while we're here. I went and saw, remember they had those terrible Michael Bay produced Ninja Turtle movies? Remember those ones from the mid-2010s? Yeah. So I went to see one of those, and I went to this Campbelltown cinema because I refused to pay more than $7.50 to see that film. So I went on a Saturday morning. It was like a 9:30 a.m. session, and it was a almost sold-out theater of just like young kids going to see like this this Ninja Turtle film. Okay? Awesome. Okay? Young kids going in there, some teenagers, like everyone was all excited. I watched as this one enterprising teenage boy was walking into the theater with a pizza. He was able to get a local pizzeria to open up early to make for him. Okay. Again, 9:30 in the morning, walking in with a pizza to see the Ninja Turtles, and they refused him entry because of the pizza. Like, come on. Yeah. What sort of monsters are these?
Like, I agree. No, I totally agree. You can't take hot food into... I've sat with people who've taken like Chinese food into... Yeah, what?
Simon, it's a $7.50 cinema at 9:30 in the morning to see a Ninja Turtles movie. If you can't make an excuse for anyone, surely you got to do it here. What sort of monster would you be to prevent this from happening?
We'll differ on that one. All right, that brings to an end our Raiders of the Lost Ark special edition of Screen Watching. That's been fun. I love talking all things Raiders.
This has been the curmudgeonly Simon Foster and the supportive Dan Barrett.
Only because you wanted some pizza. That's what you were going for. You were going to rumble him and take off with his pizza.
Too early in the morning. I can't eat pizza at 9:30 a.m., but I respect that he went and did it. What a champion.
All right, my friend, have a great week. We'll see you next week. I'm keen to get your thoughts on Dial of Destiny. By the time we come around to our next podcast, you will have seen the film and you will have views.
Look, I will mention that in the What Else Have You Been Watching in the next week's podcast. And the other thing I'll be talking about in What Else Have You Been Watching is the movie Summer Days, Summer Nights.
Why should I know that? Do I know that?
You probably don't know this, and let me tell you what it is, Simon. No. a couple, like about a year or two ago on this very podcast, this would have been like early as we started, I reviewed a TV show. It was on the Stan streaming service in Australia. It was a TV series, the first TV series by one Edward, I've just forgotten his surname, from Brothers McMullen, Edward Burns.
Brothers McMullen, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Edward Burns did this TV show called Bridge and Tunnel. Actress. Stacey.
That's right, with Caitlin Stacey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's I reviewed that TV program. I also talked about the second season because I was just marveling that there was a second season of this program. But I also did a review for that when it came along. What I didn't realize when I was reviewing either of these programs is that basically it was Edward Burns doing a rehash of a 2018 movie he shot called Summer Days, Summer Nights, which much like that TV show is about a bunch of young people who are, you know, they're just about to start university, but like in Bridge and Tunnel, they were just back from having, you know, been to uni. So slightly different, but like early 80s and very similar types of people, also starring Caitlin Stacey. But the film has just cropped up on both Stan and Binge in Australia, so you can watch it on whatever streaming service you want. Oh, sorry, no, it's just on Binge. I don't think it's on Stan.
Give us the title again, because I wasn't listening the first two times.
So I think on the fifth time I mentioned it, it was called Summer Days, Summer Nights. But here's the thing. This is one of these films that I think went to some film festivals. It didn't quite find a distributor or something, I'm guessing. Like, I don't quite know the history. But I know that when it debuted, it was called Summertime. At a certain point, it was just called Summer Nights. And now it's called Summer Days, Summer Nights. And you can find different versions of the posters, like, around when you do a search for the film. Like, I swear, outside of me and, like, five other people, no one else has seen this movie. But I will talk about this on What Else Have You Been Watching?
I'm sure you will be. All right, my friend, let's wrap up this Indiana Jones special edition. Do all those things where you can read all your stuff.
Alwaysbewatching.com. Check it out.
Always. Screen-space.net and all the screen watching things as well. You'll find all our stuff. It's been fun. Play us out with a little bit of the classic John Williams music.
I won't do that, but how about a little dance?
Okay. Like a CGI monkey.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Folks, this has been Screen Watching. We'll be back next week. Okay.